people are starting to come and say, we want you to come and give our people a boost. They need a mindset boost. We've taught them all the process. They're just not doing the process.
Everything leads to growth with the National Association for Sales Professionals. The Leads to Growth podcast with the National Association for Sales Professionals provides in-depth discussions sharing the best sales, prospecting, influence, and communication skills, as well as sales training techniques to take your professional sales career to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Leads to Growth with the National Association of Sales Professionals. I am excited to be here with you today, not only because I got a great view out the window and you could just share a little bit of it as well, but it's like coffee with friends here. We've got just somebody extraordinary, really excited to have with us today. Lee Ashton is with Sales Consultancy, and Lee is one of the top mindset coaches, trainers in the world. Specializing in NLP growth mindset, but she's just knocking the cover off the ball over in the UK, across the pond, so to speak. And we've just had such a great time connecting and talking about all the shifts that are happening. So we said, you know what, let's do this. Let's record this conversation. The world needs to hear what's happening. And I'm just so excited to bring Lee here. Lee's an author. Works with thousands and thousands of major companies all over the world, and just had tremendous success and is ridiculously well respected. And you know this because just the reviews just keep coming on her LinkedIn page just over and over again. So Lee, welcome to Leads to Growth. Thank you for being here.
Oh, I'm so, so delighted, Chris. I mean, we've known each other such a long time, and it's lovely to be able to spend some time with you and share what we have both been noticing in the world.
Absolutely. And so just great to have you, and we're going to get right into it. And so welcome, everybody. You're in the room in our conversation. And what Lee and I were just talking about is the world's changed, obviously. And everybody's familiar, right? A lot of stuff happened the last couple of years. We're all present. The crazy part is not over, right? But it's also that we've all experienced it in unique and different ways. We are an interconnected people now. We're no longer separated by the water or by countries or this thing. We work with internationally. We work side by side with people internationally now. And things are changing all over the world. And one of the things that Lee and I were just speaking of that we've noticed is there's been a big shift in, I would say, the needs of salespeople and sales professionals. And I want, as we've moved through this time, I think we all can admit that we miss connection, that even going out into public is a little unique sometimes. You're not quite sure what to say, how to say it, how to act, how to respond. And if this carries over to our sales and our buyers, obviously it does. Imagine what they're going through right now, right? This uncertainty, this flexibility. And so as we know, moving forward, being able to utilize, grow, to have a growth mindset has always been something that we've been carrying the flag on. But now, Lee, what are we seeing out there right now that people are coming to us? So tell the people a little bit, one, about Sales Consultancy, where your background a little bit, and how you got to this place of really being on the forefront of mindset and NLP and understanding the value of it and the importance of it for our sales managers and leaders.
Okay. So my journey started in the late 80s when I first got into sales, and I was really a successful salesperson because I just love people. I didn't know I had a strategy, a winning strategy. I just did what was natural. And it wasn't until I got promoted to sales manager and tried to share what I did with my sales team that I realized that people didn't do what would help them, because I'd never experienced it in my own life. I now know I'm naturally growth mindset. So if I can't get something one way, I'll just keep trying different things and different approaches to get it. I didn't even know there was such a thing around fixed and growth mindset. And in fact, the research had not even been done until the late 90s by Carol Dweck. So when I got promoted to sales manager and I wasn't having the success that I'd had as an individual, I felt that it, for the first time, like a failure, that I couldn't influence my sales team. And that led me down this path of what is happening here. So like any growth mindset person, you go off and you read books and you find out how to do stuff. But one thing I didn't even realize back then, even though I really understood that it was all about the mind, is the one thing I didn't understand was when you are successful as a salesperson and you become a sales leader, you don't really understand the people who are not naturally that way. Mm. You understand that they're not the same as you, but you can't get under the skin of someone who doesn't think in the way you do. And it wasn't until I discovered NLP in the 90s that I thought, oh, this is the missing piece. Mm. And at that whole time, then growth mindset and accelerated learning was, you know, really in its infancy. And so over the years, when I started the sales consultancy in 95, it was set up specifically to help people think differently. And I guess I launched it at exactly the right time because I picked up on things as they were emerging and started having success with businesses, not going in and teaching them any sales processes. I didn't go in and say, this is how you negotiate, or this is how you close a deal, or this is how you do this or that, or any other part of the sales process. I went into companies to show them how to love themselves, accept where they are, wherever they are, and acknowledge that they got to the next stage by just taking one step at a time. And you couldn't go from, say, chapter 5 of your life book to chapter 35 of your life book without doing chapter 6, 7, 8, 9. So there was no quick win. You can't go from here to here in one jump without missing a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny that you know, we talk about this all the time. You know, the joy is in the journey, the wins are in the journey, the growth is in the journey. We talk about the lottery syndrome. Often when you jump, when you make that jump, you don't feel worthy of what you've received, the benefit, because you didn't earn it. You didn't go through the process to get there, but to become the person who gets to receive the benefits, oftentimes they give those things right back. I also thought it was very interesting too that the How ironic and what a unique move by your employer to take a high performing salesperson and make them a sales manager. We're so surprised that still doesn't work to this day. I don't know why.
And I honestly believe, and I know that you think this too, that sales leaders are the most ignored in terms of mindset development, and that is the most crucial thing they need to know. It's almost like organizations think, oh, they know how to be amazing salespeople, so let's just, like, they'll be able to show everyone else. They just I'm saying they don't get it, and some organizations don't, but as you've already alluded to, on both sides of the pond, people are starting to come and say, we want you to come and give our people a boost. They need a mindset boost. We've taught them all the process. They're just not doing the process. And I think that as part of the pandemic, many people who generally would have been very resilient struggled with some of the challenges we were all faced with as human beings. And in that struggle came some humility, some level of humbleness that made them realize what it feels like to not be on top of everything.
Wow. Yeah. Empathy, right? A little bit of empathy, you know, that chink in the armor a little bit, you know, that says, oh, wait, I'm human too. And now maybe they feel like this all the time, or that person, they now have a little bit of understanding, I think, of what other people are going through. And I think you're right that the most of the time, the resilient people, because they, it's funny, most of the sales training is invested in the top 20%, who the ones who usually don't need it, right? That's where the people invest in sales training. And so they're constantly being re-encouraged and reiterated and re-established as you're great, you're awesome, you're fantastic. And so until they get out of that loop, then they find themselves vulnerable in a place of, wow. So it was actually the sales leaders, the very successful people that finally started to get off the track where the managers were like, all right, now we really need to do something different. And they probably ran out of options, right? They're like, well, let's try the mind.
Yeah. And really, you and I have been in that place for ages. And I've got to say, it's really interesting. You know, one of my colleagues said to me, you know, Lee, you were on this path since 1995. You were before your time. He said, the world is coming to meet you.
It's so beautiful.
It feels
and so
like
true.
That.
It really does. I mean, look at it's we're becoming human again. Right? We're
hallelujah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what a beautiful response to also know that the managers and leaders are saying, hey, let's treat them like humans as well, which is a beautiful alignment. So tell me about, as you're speaking with clients now, and you talk about mindset, what does that mean in your world? I mean, what does that mean to coach somebody to love themselves? How does that translate to successful leadership?
Mindset for me is constant evolution. It's like creating marginal gains every single day. And it's not about some people do transform overnight. You might switch on a light bulb that makes all the cogs and wheels go ding, 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 ding. And then, oh my God, I've had this. So you do get that sometimes.
But
in the main, yeah, in the main, that the job of a sales leader is to shine the light in the areas of darkness in their salespeople's mind. So I perceive the mind, this is the analogy I share, as a massive warehouse. And there's the lights are only on in certain parts of that warehouse. And the job of the sales leader isn't necessarily to turn the floodlights on, it's to shine a light that makes a salesperson want to go and have a look in that space. I didn't know there was anything over there. I thought it was just darkness. To kind of inspire that curiosity and open it's almost like flickering the lights, and the person goes, oh, what's that over there? And off they go, and they discover for themselves that there's a different way of thinking. There's another perspective that changes everything for them.
I just love the words that you use there. You know, the whole idea that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. The idea that you only learn the stove is hot when you touch it yourself, not the 5 times or 20 times that your mom and dad told you don't touch the stove. It's hot, right? And I think I found myself in the same place in the past where I would say, no, can't just do the thing. Don't just do this. And I see leaders do it all the time. No, just do this. Follow these simple instructions, like giving people a verbatim call script. You're taking their ability to think away. And what you said is so beautiful. Shine the light over there to inspire. What comes to me is questions. Yeah. You know, like ask questions, which goes right back to what we were saying, being empathetic and being human. When you love yourself so much, finally, that love begins to overflow to others. You're no longer looking to fill your void. You're now able to actually look and to be empathetic and to hear somebody for the first time sometimes. Because usually we only hear them through our own filter. And that filter is how angry I am this morning at the TPS reports didn't get done, or the my wife or partner yelled at me this morning, or that the traffic was bad. And now I'm hearing you through something completely different.
Yeah. It's really interesting because I love that you talk about love and filling the void, because I have such a strong sense that leadership is very much like parenting. Now, I'm not a parent. I didn't go down that route in this lifetime.
It's two of us.
But, you know, I'm a great auntie and I observe, I observe a lot. And the minute you start really caring about the people in your team, not, and I don't mean that mushy, sentimental kind of caring, because that's not what I mean at all. It's that if your child is being a brat, you have a conversation with that child because you don't want them to grow into an adult that's a brat. Do you have that word in the US, brat?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Doesn't know any different, right? The child has no idea. And in order to make sure that that child doesn't get victimized or attacked for inappropriate behavior, you want to educate your child for their good. So it's that tough love conversation. So that's what I'm talking about.
It's beautiful too, because it's influence. It's not manipulation. I think Seth Godin said it, where influence is getting someone to do something for their reasons. Manipulation is getting someone to do something for your reasons. Could be the same thing. Could be the same thing, but when you do it for their reasons, you find that you're not just, you want them to learn, you want them to understand, you want them to be able to do it again when you're gone. You know, and it's a completely different perspective. And I love how you compared it to parenting. We just got done doing, I was with Rod and we did a YPO mother-son event in the Smoky Mountains. And so we had 30 women executives or the wives of women of executives and their sons, 10 to 13. And there may have been a brat or two there, but it was very funny how most of the women were, I mean, they had raised some really powerful, amazing young kids. And these kids were such privileged kids. The Galapagos Islands. Oh, I watched World Cup in France. You know, they were that way. And the mothers all had the perspective of, we just don't know what to do now. And it's almost like you said, the parenting, you can't be the overprotective, lovey. That's not serving anybody. That may get you to your number this week. That may make you as a sales leader or a parent feel good.
Yeah.
But it's not sustainable, and it doesn't get that child or that that salesperson to the next level, to where they want to be, and an opportunity to then grow to the next level. Because as you said, it's not turning overnight. It's the ability to do a little bit more every single day that makes us feel good, fulfilled every day, but also gets us eventually to where we want to go. So how do you help these sales leaders break these old patterns of, cause it's, I imagine you go in there and they're like, you're like, no, just let them do it. They'll learn. They're like, no, but if I don't do it right now, then the numbers are like, how do you help them break those patterns?
Well, the good thing is that most sales leaders who adopt that very telling approach to leadership, you know, do it like this, and this works for me, so you do it that way, are generally very frustrated sales leaders. They're frustrated because they can't actually understand why their salespeople who are not performing are not performing, despite everything they do to help them, everything they do to assist them. They just don't understand. And so I come in and I share with them some really simple psychological things and examples from other organizations, other human beings. And they go, oh man, how did I not think of that myself? It's like, you know, when something is so true and you hear it, you go, I can't believe I never thought of that myself.
We call it a scotoma. So in the belief, we have the belief model is it's like when you have your keys in your hand and you're running around because you're late, but you know you've lost your keys. I can't find them anywhere. You forget to look down in your right hand or in your left pocket and they were right there. And it's so funny because it's so intuitive, but yet our beliefs blind us from what we really need to see. Because we have a belief that they're not capable, they can't do it, or something like that. And that belief is fulfilled in the way that they act and treat us or respond to us. But when we give them that same respect in the other direction, we find, oh, wow. You mean if I just allow them to do it, they do it? Yeah. Well, I never tried that.
Honestly, it's so, human beings, when somebody hears something that is really wholesome and good, they embrace it. You know, their body kind of opens up to it. So once I'm in an organization and I just share a few things, then they go, oh, wow, Lee, that's not so simple. I can't, you know, and they want to try it out. The most challenging bit is changing the habits of a lifetime. So the way that I make it work is I say, just focus on three things for now and doing 5 or 10 minutes every day of those new things, and let's get that in the muscle, then we can do the next three things.
I absolutely love it, and it's so simple. And if they were to do these things without focusing on the reward or the end, like, it's hard to do those little things when you don't know where you're going and you don't realize that there's a plan to do them, right? But when you say, no, look, here's the outcome. And well, how do I do it? No, let's just do a little bit every day. That you find rewards and fulfillment in those little things every day, because you know what they play out to be. When you're doing those 10 times those little things every day, you're running yourself mad because you don't know what the outcome is, and nothing's changing. And I think I love that, because you don't end up doing 50 push-ups a day by starting with 50 push-ups a day or 100 push-ups a day. You start with 5. You know, you start with walking to the corner, not running a marathon. You know, I know some people have gone the other direction, but we forget that mental habits are built the same way physical habits are built.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And often people, especially sales leaders, they do have a belief that they are too busy to do any more than they're doing. And they are really busy. But the kind of work that you and I focus on, Chris, is not doing it in addition. It's doing it instead of what they're doing, because what they're doing isn't working. But the only way that you can make them feel that, get them to feel that in the body, say, 5 or 10 minutes a day, and they say, oh, no, I'll do it all on a Friday. I'll do 2 hours on a Friday. I go, no, you're better off doing 5 or 10 minutes a day, which is less than 2 hours on a Friday. Because what happens when you get to Friday and you're busy? It goes. And the other thing is the daily repetition creates the habit. And with that habit, you get that in the muscle. So it's only through the years that I've been working with them that I've tested things. Does that work? Does it not work? I've tried loads of stuff that hasn't worked over the years. And from that, I just think, you know, every time I deliver a program or, you know, we do some work with a client as a team, we're always evaluating, did that land? Did it get the outcome that we wanted? And if it didn't, what can we do better next time? So because we're a learning and growth organization, we obviously just think that way for our own work. So I think all of those years of doing that has enabled me to, I can work with people who are not even salespeople and get them to love sales, you know.
Absolutely. I think the bad name sales has is the icky feeling that gives people, because they feel like they're manipulating. There's the name of it that it gives people, you know, and we teach sales in universities because that's the number one selling sales. It's number one sale you probably make your whole life is next to your wife or your significant other is that first career job. If you look at the data, I'm reading a book by, I think William Pink is his name, and the data behind where the income you make in the first job you get out of school and how it continues to play out in your lifetime earnings is significant. The data just tells the truth. If you get in here, you only end up getting here. And if you get in there, and this is with regular corporate America jobs, Wall Street, different things of that nature, you know, the entrepreneur piece is spinning off a little bit more now, but most people, they roll in with that credit card debt. They get into that first job. They get locked in. They end up in a local area with the job, with the debt, with the gym. They get the wife and they're comfortable. Now they have dual income. It's a comfortable way to live. And they don't move on from the careers. They may change jobs, you know, positions, but not from that career, that industry. And so I think everybody's in sales. Everybody's in influence. Everybody, and the more that we understand that, and also the fact that right back to where we started, that sales is not about, you know, moving somebody somewhere they don't want to go. Sales is about understanding people. Right. And how ironic is it that our top salespeople get put to managers and still can't sell the people below them?
Oh, no.
That just clicked for me. That just clicked for me.
I've said that this week. I was delivering a session this week, virtual, and they asked me about some people that wouldn't do stuff. And I said, well, really, the feedback is that you haven't sold it to them well enough. This was a sales leader who went,
Well, it's true, because we as on a team, we assume people know what, like you said, I'm speaking to the way that I would want to be spoken to, but that person doesn't react that way. They're motivated by something different. Or I didn't take the time to develop some rapport with my salesperson. I didn't take the time to ask them how their day was, become a little empathetic to find out where they're at, to get them into the right state of mind to close up this, all the finesse that we do on a sales call. And then we go to sell someone on our team. We're like, hey, I need you to do these things, right? All right, go.
Seriously. Do you know, often I've said to sales leaders, I think that sales leaders should have a mission. So as part of our leadership programs, we also always get them to create a sales leadership mission, which is their, like, their North Star, their guiding light. Or how aligned are they to that? And it's always about creating a culture where everyone can grow and thrive and succeed. And one of the things that's really interesting is as part of that process, I say, what do you actually know about the people in your team? Do you know their partner's name? Do they have any pets? Do they have kids? What are their kids' names? Where do they go on holiday? What do they do at the weekend? And people, when that, they go, oh man, I don't know anything about these people other than what I talk to them about at work.
Yeah.
I said, how can you lead somebody that you don't even know?
Yeah, it's how can you sell somebody without asking what their problem is? We tell the salespeople all the time, how can you try to sell them your product when you haven't even taken the time to ask them the question is to uncover a need first?
The irony.
I just thought of this for the first time.
You know, I always say to sales leaders, treat your salespeople the way you treat your customers, and you can't go wrong. You know,
I love that.
It is exactly that.
It is exactly that. And it's so funny too, because what changes a salesperson when they get put to a managerial position? Nothing changes but the way that they feel about themselves and their ability to do it. Their belief changes. Well, I've never managed people before. I don't know what to do. Well, it's the same thing as you were doing before. If you would just ride with that belief, if you were able to transfer that belief in the fact that you're now just selling again. But sometimes, well, I don't want to be selling the people I work with, right? Well, why not? Is the selling that you do manipulative or bad? But it's that thing that we say. It's a common thing. Oh, I don't want to sell my family, or I don't want to sell my friends. Well, then what are you doing to those other people? You know, so I there's a great book that I'm reading for the second time now, called The Trillion Dollar Coach, by William Campbell. It's about William Campbell, who was the coach of like almost everyone in Silicon Valley.
Oh wow!
Yeah, the Google brothers.
Him out.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to the book. But it's great, and he talks about his one-on-one meetings and also his team meetings, and what they do every time in a team meeting is, you know, they share about their trip. They share something personal about their experience over the last week or weekend, where they were, what they did, something about them. Because then when it comes time to everything else to happen, you now realize that you're dealing with a human, not just not just a thing. And I think that humanizing just comes full circle back to what we were saying again.
Yeah. You know, when we first went into lockdown here in the UK last year, we had a team meeting every single day. And it was purely, how are you doing?
Mm.
What, you know, how are you feeling? How are you doing? What do you need? And it was beautiful. You know, it just kept us, it was a lifeline.
And I'm sure the people out there were saved by it as well. Like, I mean, it was a community thing, but I'm sure there were days when people were like, thank you for asking. Like, just to be able to have that let go and know that somebody cares. I mean, we speak with people all over the world, and I had to be careful because everyone was experiencing it different. You know, we have a business partner in Australia, in Sydney. They had one case come up, and they've been in lockdown for 2 weeks. And you forget too, like, living in nature, living in the city? What access do you have? What's your family situation at that home? I mean, we know that depression is up, abuse, drug abuse, physical abuse, mental, all these different things are up right now. And it stems right back from what you led with. And I'm just so happy that you said that. You teach people to love themselves.
Yeah.
It is amazing how easy we can get out of our ways when we truly love ourselves. Yeah. We're not. I love that you lead with lovely. And that is such a beautiful a beautiful analogy, and to have it happening in corporate America right now is just such a beautiful thing. And also, let's talk about too, the new employees are demanding this, right?
People want a job that fulfills them,
where
they grow and they can progress. And like, hats off to the younger generation who are like moving into these corporate jobs. They are not going to put up with that nonsense that we have been like living through in previous decades, where it's like, it was a mark of respect if you worked really long hours and you were always working and you were exhausted. And it was just, that's crazy and such a toxic way to live.
100%. I mean, you just saw Iceland just announced that they tested their 4-day or 3 or 4 4-day work week, I think. Three or 4 day work week and having tremendous success.
That's fantastic.
I heard the Spain, when they dropped their siestas, not a lie, when they dropped their siestas, production went down everywhere. When they stopped doing these mid afternoon breaks, because I mean, the same book, William Pink, I'm reading, they talk about our state of mind. We go in every day is start off as a high. Afternoon's a valley, and then we end up finishing high again. And you can alleviate these valleys a little bit by taking little breaks, 20-minute naps, resetting your mindset. But as you said, take 5 minutes, take 15 minutes to go for a walk. You know what I could do? You know how many emails I could reply to in 15 minutes? People are so, and then what happens is you lose power. You have to go into nature. You aren't able to do all those things. And you're like, wait a second. World's still turning. Everything's still going. So you mean that there wasn't all that pressure on me was just from myself?
Yeah.
I think people got, you're right. We're going to look back at this, and you choose to define it how you define it, right? But I think we're going to look back at this and say this was a crack in the armor or in the shell that finally got us to be humans again. And this was an accelerator of that, I believe. And I love the work that you're doing. I would love for you to share one more story with me a little bit. Tell me about an example of success that you're having over there right now. So one of your client engagements, something of that nature, where you've allowed somebody to get to an aha moment. And because here's why I ask. A lot of people are like, yeah, there's still those people out there, Lee, that aren't on the inside like we are. They're still going, all right, I get it, but it sounds a little frou-frou to me. You know, like I get it. And I think the first step of either being aware or getting to a point where you have no other choice but to look at this is it doesn't have to happen that way. Right. Like what is a little story to share where maybe a person wasn't really all down to move on the mindset and start with the self-love, but was able to see some aha moments and have it translate into something good in business and in their for their people.
Well, you know, I try very hard not to go in with "you must love yourself, people," because I know that they're going to think, who is this woman?
I like that you said I try really hard too, because it must be difficult for you.
So I kind of, in the same way that I get them to take small steps, I ease them in gently. So by the time I say, sorry, guys, you got to love yourselves, people, if you want this. So I think that a great story would be around, I have a client who's in automotive. Okay. And, you know, that's like when, I don't know if it's the same in the US, but in the UK, when you think of like a really, like, not a very nice salesperson, they're generally in automotive.
They're the old breed, the old guard, so to speak. Yeah.
Now, this client actually called me in because they are not like that. And they said, Lee, can you come in and ensure that our salespeople were not like used car salesmen? So the way that the story that I'd like to share is really around how even people who are from that old school way of thinking, because they employed youngsters who they could mold themselves, but they also employed people from other automotive organizations. And one of them in particular, I'm thinking, was on a program, and it was all about KPIs and achieving targets. And he just happened to share an example of something that was going on in his life. And because I talked about parenting and sales leadership is very similar. And he said that his son comes into his bedroom at like in the early hours of the morning, sometimes crying because he's had a bad dream. And he's a 6-year-old child. And I shared, like he was saying, I've told him to man up and go back to bed. And so, and this is where I am quite edgy, I guess. And I said, and your small son goes back to bed and cries himself to sleep thinking that his dad doesn't care about him. And he went, what do you mean? I said, did your dad tell you to man up? And he went, probably. And I said, how do you think a child of 6 knows how to man up? He's 6 years old. And you know, and where is that a pattern in your life? Where are you doing that with other people in your life? And the next time I saw him, he went, when he comes into my room now, I say, like, get into bed, or it's just a bad dream. And, you know, and so sometimes you have to, and now, this was some time ago, now he is an amazing sales leader because now he has empathy, as you say. He can understand that just like he's like a 40-year-old man and he's telling a 6-year-old child to man up. And I said, age, actually, you know that a 6-year-old child hasn't got the experience to know what to do. But quite honestly, some people who are in your team have the inner wounded child that is showing up with them no matter what age they are. You know, they might have had an overbearing parent that told them to man up, or that never accepted their grades at school, that told them that they were useless or hopeless. Or I said, and they come to work pretending that their life is okay, and they are trying to hide that. So by attaching it to something real in his life, he was then able to see something he'd never seen before. And that doesn't mean he's not focused on target. They're doing stonkingly well. But it's because he's created more happiness and more openness and psychological safety where people can say, I'm not okay. Because he's done that, the way people can speak their truth, they're actually accepting themselves more and they're growing from wherever they are and acknowledging wherever they are. That psychological safety to say, I'm not okay, I'm not doing okay, is enormously important. You can't really have growth mindset without it.
I'm so glad I put you on the spot and asked you that question. I didn't prep her for that one. And what a beautiful, beautiful response. You know, I'm so grateful, and I find a lot of passion in corporate consulting on the side, executive coaching, these things, because I realize how much the work we do translates to the personal lives, to their home lives, to their relationships. And also, you presented it in a different way. I forget that that's sometimes a great example to use to get them to see a different perspective in the way that they're managing their employees, to remind them that it's not just an employer relationship, that is a human relationship. And what better way to humanize somebody than to compare it to their son or daughter or something that's very personal to them. Lee, I love our conversations. I really do. And it's been so much fun. We have to have you on as a monthly guest. By the way,
I'd
we
love
probably,
to.
I think we're going to increase this to weekly very soon. And when I do, you know, we'll definitely get you back on again. But I really just really grateful for having you. Where can our fans and our followers find you and follow you?
At LinkedIn, I do lots of stuff around leadership. Also, our website, which is sales-consultancy.com, and LinkedIn. I'm so proud, actually. I'm Lee Ashton One. I was the first Ooh. Lee Ashton on LinkedIn.
Even if you weren't the first
one on
LinkedIn.
That's one of the great things about being older.
Even if you weren't the first one, I'd be so, you know, she's Lee Ashton One for sure. And listen, you can also find her on the NASP blog.
Yes.
Lee is one of our top contributors and always putting out amazing top content on there. So make sure that you check that out. A lot of updates coming to the NASP website. So keep an eye out for that. Make sure that you go to, Apple, Spotify, whatever you're using to listen to podcasts, download us, but make sure that you give us 5 stars. It's really easy. Just click the 5 stars and review us. If we're not 5 stars yet, drop me a line. Let me know what we can do to get there. But Lee, you're the best. Thank you so much. I really do love my time. I was feeling a little groggy this morning, but after 45 minutes with you, I'm feeling on top of the world. So
that's awesome.
Keep working your magic all over the world. You're making the world a better place, and we're all better because you're in it. So thank you so much. Leads to Growth fans, we love you and appreciate you. Make sure that you know, I already told you what to do. We'll see you on the next one, y'all. Cheers.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.